This is All Things Considered on KNKX. I'm Ed Ronco. As a country, the United States has had previous moments where race has come into the forefront of our national dialogue and where protests have called for change. Politico magazine recently published takes from a handful of experts about whether this current moment of racial reckoning is any different than those previous. They included a short essay from Christopher Sebastian Parker, a professor of political science at the University of Washington. He joins us now to talk about that. Professor Parker, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Ed.
You've written extensively about race in this country. Your first book was about black veterans in the South. Another of your books focuses on the attitudes and beliefs of the Tea Party. This recent essay in Politico talks about whether anything's different in this moment. And you say that for you, the jury is still out. What did you mean?
Well, what I mean by that is, I mean, we have these upheavals, it seems like. Usually it's around every 50 years. And, you know, the last time, of course, was in the 1960s. And, you know, when it looked like, you know, monumental change was going to happen. And so in spite of, you know, Johnson's attempt with the Great Society program, the fact of the matter is things weren't really a whole lot better. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that there are a lot of whites who were like, OK, well, you got the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. So why, you know, aren't black people, you know, happy with that? Well, the fact of the matter is those were really addressed to the South, right? The former Confederate states of the South. Beyond the South, black folks were permitted to vote and discrimination was not statutory, right? So, but we still had these same problems, right? Not necessarily when it comes to the vote, but because of labor market discrimination, housing discrimination, educational discrimination, those things were still happening beyond the South. And so then, so whatever change we had or was promised by the Great Society program was essentially staunched. And so it's akin to black people playing Charlie Brown to white people's Lucy, right? Here's a football, come kick it, here's right here, boom, and it gets snatched away.
You've studied this, obviously, for years and years and years. You work in political science. Does having that long view of the incremental steps this country has taken through the generations give you hope, give you skepticism, a mix of both? I mean, what does that do for you and the way you view our chances at any kind of forward motion here?
So here's the thing. I'll preface what I'm going to say by saying I'm a black man in America, right? It's kind of hard to be an optimist, especially if one is educated, because one then knows the history. I mean, the face of racism, it changes through time, right? There was once back in the day, like prior to the 1960s, this thing called Jim Crow racism. Old-fashioned racism. And that was a racism in which whites believed that black people were just biologically inferior. You know, along comes the 1960s. And so then racism shifted more towards this idea that it's not that black people are necessarily culturally inferior. It's that they violate cherished American values, you know, one of which is the Protestant work ethic. So then black people were seen as lazy. And then that was married to this what's called anti-black affect or this dislike of black people. And in some ways, it was because of government intervention on their part that black people were disliked, right? Because there are some white folks that were like, they shouldn't need that. So let me, in the present context, let me give you an example. So there was a survey that was recently conducted by a colleague at the University of Maryland. She surveyed protesters in New York City, 61% of whom were white. And that's a good thing. But the problem is that these are exigent circumstances, right? You know, people are confined for the most part, or they should be, to their homes, right? And so they're forced to watch these images of George Floyd getting murdered over and over again. And, you know, reports of Breonna Taylor, you know, and then of Ahmaud Arbery getting killed by these white vigilantes, one of whom was a retired cop. And so to some people, now this is the cynic in me saying this, and you have Biff and Bethany that are locked up in their house, and it's like, it's a protest. We can get out of the house, right? Now, I'm not saying none of it's sincere, because I'm quite sure, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that, because I'm quite sure there is some sincerity, right?
It's clear, right, that some people want this sweeping change to happen fast, defunding police departments right away, for example. That's different energy than the long-term work of dismantling segregated neighborhoods or building black wealth or any of the kind of longer-term things. And I wonder if you have concern, like you just said, over interest of allies flagging.
I'm very skeptical about that because, like, some people will say, you know, and I agree. Okay, we have a racist president. COVID is really laying bare, along with what's happening, you know, what happened in the wake of George Floyd, right? Police brutality and health disparities based on race, right? We've always had racist presidents, right? So let's forget about that one, right? Most people in the know have known for a very long time, you know, that there are race-related health disparities, right? That's nothing new. This isn't the first time, you know, police brutality, you know, has kicked off or sparked urban unrest. So then what is new about this? Well, what's new about it is the confluence of all of these things. Now, for Black folks, this is constant for us, right? But for white folks, they're like, oh, my God, right? Now, even though we've had racist presidents in the past, right, they have mainly done it, well, maybe with the exception of Woodrow Wilson, they have mainly done it, you know, through the use of dog whistles, right? Like saying, we need more law and order. Well, that's code for we need to keep these Black people in their places. But with Trump, he has ripped the covers off, right?
You're working on a book to be titled The Great White Hope, Donald Trump, Race, and the Crisis of American Democracy. Working in news, we struggle to keep up with everything, and we get to write something new every day. And so I've just been wondering, when you're writing a book about what's going on right now, what's that process like? I mean, do you find yourself revising and revising and revising because things are changing too quickly? I'm just curious.
So the underlying story remains the same. Trump supporters are not driven by, as many people thought initially, economic anxiety. They're driven by this anxiety associated with the belief that they're losing, quote unquote, their country. And when I say there, I'm referring to white, middle class or better off, Christian, native born, straight male. And so those people that can't check all those boxes, they fear are taking their country from them. And that's what they're reacting against. Now, that's the principal reason why Trump gets away with everything he gets away with. So that whole story, even though some of the substantive stuff changes, like, okay, we have COVID, you know, now we got the protests, right? That stuff changes, right? But the underlying story remains the same.
You wrote in the Seattle Times that people confuse nationalism for patriotism, and that patriotism can and often does and should take the form of people disagreeing with their country and sacrificing something to change it.
So when people criticize the United States, you get these right wingers that say, America, love it or leave it. That's not patriotism, right? Especially if the country is not realizing the values on which it was founded, right? The big problem with the United States isn't about the values. It's about the lack of universal applications of the values. And so what you have here, you have this principal policy gap, or you have this gap that separates social practice from beliefs, right, and values. And if these things can come into alignment, right, then I think a lot of our problems would be solved. And so it is incumbent on the patriot to hold the country accountable to realize the promise of democracy, and in this case, American democracy, which consists of freedom, equality, and toleration. As long as we're not practicing those, the patriot is obligated to criticize the country. This country was founded on dissent, period, full stop.
I have a thousand more questions for you, but they'll have to wait to another time.
Okay.
I've thoroughly enjoyed being able to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ed.